Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
With this act, because of the bravery of our troops, the sacrifices of their families, and the leadership of President Obama, we are able to say the war in Iraq is over. Our troops are coming home for the holidays with their families. President Obama promised to end the war in Iraq responsibly, promise made, promise kept. 150,000 troops were in Iraq when President Obama took office. That number will now be reduced to just a couple thousand.
I'll be home for Christmas.
Pathetic that the Democrat socialists would be as cynical as to use the deaths of 4,485 members of the U.S. military and the maiming and wounding of 32,226 U.S. service members for political gain, as though Obama had anything to do with Iraq one way or the other. But let's put Obama and Pelosi aside. Was the war in Iraq worth it? In plain English, for the millions of people who listen to the Savage Nation who are fed up with the political class, who can't wait for this darn election to be over, sick of it, just sick of it. They can't take any more of these debates and such. And the real ads haven't even started to poison the airwaves yet. I'm asking you a question. Was the war in Iraq worth it? Now, when I say worth it, that's a relative term. If you're dead and buried and lying in a cold grave, of course your family would say it wasn't. If you're one of the 32,226 who've left an arm, an eye, a leg, or such another body part in the desert sands, of course it wasn't worth it. But what about the American people? How much has it cost us in dollars and cents? How about in morale? How about in a sense of purpose? Trillions of dollars were wasted on these ungrateful Iraqis. Now, back in 06, I feared this would happen. I wrote a book called Liberalism as a Mental Disorder, and my books are somewhat prophetic in some regard, not because I'm a prophet, but because I'm able to use history to predict what might happen, and that's considered prophetic when it does happen. I want to read you what I wrote about Bush and about his miscalculation with regard to Iraq. You're going to have to indulge me because, look, what's a radio show all about? It's entertainment. It's somewhat educational. You know, last night I was at a small holiday party in Marin County. It was beautiful, by the way. The food was astonishingly good. And a young man, it was a crowded, jammed restaurant. A young man came up to me. I never met him. And he saw me and Teddy in the restaurant. I was sitting in the vestibule. He said, "Are you Michael Savage?" "Yes." He said, "Well, I've listened to you since I'm a kid in San Diego, and I want you to meet my girlfriend." He said, "I don't always agree with you, but," he said, "you know, one thing is I learned from you." I said, "Well, thank you, blah, blah, blah." So, you know, if it's about learning in addition to having a good time and complaining and using it as a sounding board, that's all well and good. But at a certain point, the credibility of the talk show host is all that you have. If you don't have credibility, no reason for anyone to listen to you every day, let alone ever listen to you at all. You know, you can only be outrageous for a certain period of time, and then you're just Clarabelle the Clown with a horn, and you're gone. So I have to tell you that in the waning years of the Bush regime, I feared the man was not only a fiscal socialist and called him that. He's the one who gave us the road to Obama socialism. And with regard to Iraq, here's what I wrote. I said, "Ideals are fine, reality is better." And I said, "There's another dimension to my assertion that President Bush appears to be mired in military miscalculation." This was back in 06 or whenever I wrote it. "As a student of history," I wrote, "it's painfully clear to me that Mr. Bush has made essentially the same critical mistake that Jimmy Carter made in Iran. Without getting into technical details, let me explain. Carter was concerned about the human rights abuses under the Shah of Iran and the secret police, the SAVAK. The SAVAK, like Saddam, tortured dissenters in the most brutal fashion. Knowing this, Carter undermined the Shah's regime. The human rights abuses under the Shah were real enough and needed to be addressed, I wrote. I don't take issue with that fact. However, the Shah was a Western-educated modern man who was very much an ally of the United States. By unseating the Shah of Iran in order to usher in a more democratic nation, Carter inadvertently brought to power Ayatollah Khomeini, who in turn formed the first modern Islamic Republic. Now, what does that mean? It means that the world is now suffering from radical Islam as it sweeps around the globe from the epicenter of Iran. In hindsight, Carter's bleeding heart led to millions of bleeding hearts, literally. An analogy could be made to George Bush, I wrote, in Iraq. If you accept that the whole reason for going to war against Saddam Hussein was because of Hussein's human rights abuses, the torture chambers, and his oppression and murder of his own people, then the analogy holds. What has the result been? As you'll see in a moment, by toppling the Butcher of Baghdad, more instability and more radical Islamic influence has emerged, not less. Which is why we must consider whether or not President Bush has made the same mistake as Carter as a result of his humanitarian instincts. In other words, you might argue that history is repeating itself because of liberal advisors to the throne of power. I want to speed this up because I can't read you the whole thing. And I want to get to the point that I'm making. And it's all about what is happening right now, now that the so-called war in Iraq is over. In the next section, I call it Supersizing Iran. The Iraqi Shiites, whose allegiances are closer to Iran, the center of the Shia Islamic sect, are real happy now because we've defeated the Sunnis under Saddam Hussein, who had controlled Iraq. With this war, we've suddenly tilted the balance of power toward the Shiites. We've handed them a victory that they were unable to achieve on their own. Naturally, the Shiites are acting all smiley and as if they're our big friends, right? Do you think they will suddenly forget their religion? Do you think they will forget the Sunni oppression? Do you think that they've forgotten that we didn't get rid of Saddam back in 1992? The minute the Shiites win control, I fear they'll kick us out and rule with an iron heel. The reason there are uprisings in the Sunni Triangle, I wrote, is because the old Saddamites, I mean, that's past history. I just want to conclude it, if I can. It's hard to conclude something that takes a little thought. So I wrote, so it may be that Bush's war will have inadvertently created a super Iran. How? Operation Iraqi Freedom is in effect creating a Shiite nation, Iraq, next door to another Shiite nation, Iran, which happens to be a founding member of the Axis of Evil. Shiite, Shmiite, you say. What's that got to do with you? Plenty. There is the possibility that Shiite Iraq will ally itself with Iran, a nation ruled by Shiite Ayatollahs, and unify against us, which means that the hornet's nest of radical Islam may actually increase in size rather than, as Bush had hoped, shrink. In sheeple terms, that means we might have just supersized our terrorist base. Does that fear seem fanciful? I'm not the only one who's saying it, and I cited some individuals. And then I conclude as follows in Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. If you think what I'm saying couldn't happen, if you believe that our newly liberated Shiite friends in Iraq would never stab America in the back, then you don't know human nature as well as Dr. Savage does. Let's be clear. We may have liberated the Shiites, but Americans are still infidels to them. So with your indulgence, I'll share a page out of my childhood to help you get the picture. I know it's a lot of material to absorb at this time, but what I feared has happened. Obama had nothing to do with Iraq. Bush supersized Iran. And in retrospect, he made one of the greatest military blunders in American history. So I bring it back to you. Was the war in Iraq worth it? U.S. military deaths, 4485. Injured, wounded, 32,226. Cost, trillions of dollars. Corruption like we had never seen before with contractors. Was it worth it? What did we gain? Tell me what we gained. Now, Bush lied not only about weapons of mass destruction, but he lied when he said at the beginning of the war that we would receive reparations in the form of oil from these ungrateful people in Iraq. We haven't gotten a thimble full of oil, let alone the millions of barrels that we should be getting for free as reparations for having spent trillions of dollars liberating the ungrateful Shiites. But worse than that, I explained to you, Was it worth it? Now, I remember during the heyday of the Iraq War, the Republicans, the neocons, the hacks like Hannity were on the radio supporting Bush and supporting the war. Gung-ho, all the neocons are writing out liberating 24 million Iraqis and blah, blah, blah. They're suddenly your friend? The Shia were your friend all of along? What do you mean liberating them? They're liberated now that they're aligned with the Hitler of our time? Okay, I made my point today, so this is a very important story. And so on a minor note, there are other stories. That's a major note. You want to hear some minor stories? Okay, here's a minor story. You know neti pots, N-E-T-I pots, that the hippies use to clear their sinuses? They sell them in health food stores. You know what they look like. They're little teapots with a long snout on it. And the hippie occupy types, the snivelers, put them in their nose with hot water to clean their sinuses. And I've told you that they're dangerous for years. It turns out that some people using neti pots died because they poured brain-eating amoeba into their sinus cavities, which penetrated their brain. And so I asked you, have you ever seen anything like this? Did you ever use one of these lunatic devices? After all, you certainly wouldn't use it. Something as evil as Sinex or something horrendous like an actual sinus medication. That would be too American and too Western. Instead, you have to go back 10,000 years and use something that somebody who wanted to clean the snot out of their brain used in India 10,000 years ago. Now, don't get me wrong. I have been a leader in alternative medicine since the early 70s, and I've written books on herbal medicine, homeopathic medicine, nutritional medicine, etc. And so I recognize the values of alternative medicine. However, there are alternative medicine quacks and con men out there like you can't believe. And so I'll ask you, what's your worst alternative medicine horror story? I didn't change my mind and suddenly jump back to Western medicine. I use alternative medicine every day of my life, but I also eat a steak at night if I want, which I did last night. And for those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis and go look for me in various and sundry restaurants, I suggest you not look for me in the North Beach restaurant in the near future. I will not be there. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'll be home for Christmas.
Is this Fats?
On me.
You sure it's not Herman Cain?
Please.
I hear Herman Cain is going to engage into a singing tour next. He's channeling Fats Domino. He's going to put on some weight and make a tour. Look, I don't want to joke about something as deadly and as serious as the war in Iraq, but Pelosi gets up and gives a speech that Obama's a hero for bringing the troops home. I'm asking you, was the war in Iraq worth it? And I read you my prediction, my fears from my earlier book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. There's a reason my books are bestsellers. I'm not just one of those guys who has a picture on the front, hype in the middle, and empty pages. My books are like Persian miniatures, pardon the analogy. There's a lot of detail and there's a lot of research. It's true with trickle up poverty. It's true with abuse of power. My novels are like Persian miniature. Is it like a Persian miniature? There's detail. It's not just caricatures. And I wrote this book fearing that Bush would create a supersized Iran. And look what happened. So how could you say it's worth it? I don't understand it. And then the other thing I brought up. The other thing. There's a lot of other stories. There's a cop killed in New York because an unqualified affirmative action woman was made a judge. If you're listening on WOR, you especially know the story. A judge who should never have been a judge, something out of communist China, has occurred in our judicial system where the most unqualified individuals are being made into judges. She releases a known felon who the prosecutor said was dangerous, who was wanted on a warrant in North Carolina, and he shot a cop in the face and killed him. A cop left four children. The judge didn't show up for work today. Judge Evelyn Laporte will talk about her today. As far as I'm concerned, she should be charged with a crime. Yes, I think judges should be culpable for their actions, don't you? Especially when they lead to death. Obviously, she was a minority who felt that a minority was being unfairly treated by the evil system. And so she released him with no bail. she wanted to be good to her friends, you know. And he went out there and he did what he's always been doing. He was a career criminal. He shot a cop in the face without warning. That judge, as far as I'm concerned, committed homicide inadvertently, but it's a crime. Why should a judge get away with this? If you commit malpractice as a doctor, you could lose your license, don't you? Why does a judge commit malpractice and not get punished for it? Why are they above everything? Okay, let's go back to the big story. Mike in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Was
Mike,
worth it for three
Mike,
reasons.
Go ahead. Was it worth it in Iraq? Was the war worth it?
For three reasons. One, because he was caught with the chemical weapons by the United Nations inspectors. He tried to kill Bush Sr. in retaliation for the first Gulf War. And he, for years, he had been supporting the PLO and was actually briefed by them and coordinated with them in the uprisings in the West Bank and all sorts of other terrorist attacks. So he really did have a terrorist state.
So you don't fear that what I predicted is happening, that we have a supersized Shiite Iran?
Well, the world is a complicated place. I don't say that there weren't unintended consequences, and they're going to be a devil to deal with, because they are.
Hold on. You know, that's quite a devil, which is a larger Iran that now spreads from the Mediterranean all the way through the geographic boundaries of ancient Persia now. You know, there never was an Iraq. You know that was made up. You understand that, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Okay. It was created somewhere around the period of World War I or just before it, if I recall. It was carved virtually out of whole cloth, and it never existed. But truthfully, originally, it was part of Iran, Persia. Well, now the mullahs and Ahmadinejad have what they've always wanted. They have their landmass back. What did we get for this, though? What did America gain by this?
Well, I think we removed Saddam Hussein, who was the devil that we knew.
Oh, we removed the devil we knew. And who's the devil we don't know?
Well, I don't say that it's not a horrendous problem.
Well, sometimes it's better to leave the devil we know in place rather than having a new devil that we don't know, whose name is Ahmadinejad and the mullahs. And that's just my point, Mike. Sure, there were reasons, but they didn't trump the big reason.
Savage.
On this occasion, you still think of this as a dumb war?
Yeah, I think history will judge the original decision to go into Iraq. But what's absolutely clear is, as a consequence of the enormous sacrifices that have been made by American soldiers and civilians, American troops and civilians, as well as the courage of the Iraqi people, what we have now achieved is an Iraq that is self-governing, that is inclusive, and that has enormous
inclusive
potential.
Where does this word come from, this dumb word, inclusive? What is that? What does he mean by inclusive? Christians are being killed. Jews have been driven out of Iraq. What kind of crap is this, inclusive? You see, liberalism is a mental disorder, and they speak in a rhetoric that was known only to ancient monks. Monks used to speak in Latin in order to keep it from the average person. They would chant in Latin so that the average person didn't understand what they were saying, you know, mumbo-jumbo. And liberals have the same kind of mumbo-jumbo. They use words such as inclusivity, inclusive, diversity. They're sort of catchwords. Warmism. Their religion is warmism, that the earth is warming. Warmism. It came out that the data was fudged, and they wouldn't let anyone look at their data. The vermin at the East Anglia University who pushed forward this theory in the beginning, it turned out, through an email, they said no one is allowed to look at our data. Now, one of the primary tenets of science is releasing data so that others can try to conduct the experiment themselves and see if it's true. That's the primary tenet of science. And so these lying rats in the warmest school fudged the data and then sent each other an email saying, don't release the data. We don't want anyone to get a hold of it. And this was coming to them, they say, from the Department of Energy under Obama. Don't you understand that the whole warmest religion is a scam and an attempt to hijack the world's economies? Take a look at Solyndra. Take a look at the other fraudulent solar loans in America, particularly in the San Francisco Communist Bay Area, how much money has been grifted by these frauds. It's all part of their fraudulent religion. And so when you hear about global warming, climate change, you say, okay, let's look at the data. Don't give me that crap that all scientists agree with. That's utter nonsense. All scientists that are reputable don't agree with that rubbish. Only the con men and the con women who are making fortunes off it and their cronies are telling you that garbage. The first tenet of science is the ability to analyze the data. But let's go back to the big story, the war. The war, was it worth it? I don't think it was. In fact, I would argue to the contrary. I would argue that Saddam was, as Bush 1 knew, I don't know if you remember, the first Iraq war was very different. Schwarzkopf was the general. He was loved by most Americans. He should have run for the presidency. He would have won. Everyone was in love with Schwarzkopf. He was our last real general. On the order of one of the old World War II generals, gruff, competent, you had confidence in them. Ever since then, it's been nothing but corporate executive types. Nothing wrong with them if they're running a razor blade company, but you certainly don't want them running a war, which is why we haven't been doing very well, by the way, because they run it according to the protocols of a university. So in Iraq 1, when Bush Sr. went against Saddam, who had invaded Kuwait. Now, you know why they invaded Kuwait. You think it was just done categorically. The reason Saddam, you know, it's terrible if you look at history. Kuwait was stealing his oil. Originally, Kuwait was part of Iraq's landmass. Let's start with that. Let's look at the big picture. Geographically, there is no Kuwait. Okay? So a sheikdom was created, and they weren't happy enough living like the pigs that they are in Kuwait on their own oil, so they started doing horizontal drilling in Kuwait, running pipes into Iraq landmass, under the landmass of Iraq, and sucking the oil. It would be like you taking electricity from your neighbor, bootlegging electricity, which a lot of people in Marin County do. All the libs in Marin like to tap into someone else's electricity. It's the same thing. Horizontal drilling from Kuwait into the Iraq oil and stealing it. So Saddam invaded and tried to get it back. So we went to war. But instead of crushing Saddam, Bush 1 was wiser. He had better advisors. Instead of killing Saddam, instead of destroying the Revolutionary Guard, his force, Bush's advisors clipped their wings. They kept him alive. They let him keep his core of revolutionary fighters alive. Why? Because they were a counterweight to Iran. And they knew that if we wiped out Saddam and we eliminated his military might, Iran would be the big winner. Well, Bush Jr. apparently didn't listen to the same advisors. He had neocon weasels who advised him to decimate the head of Saddam, kill his sons, knock out the Revolutionary Guard, don't let their military regroup. And what we have today is just the beginning of the unfolding nightmare. So I would argue that no, not only was it not worth it, it was a mistake altogether. Now, this is very hard to say, given that many of you fought in Iraq who are listening, or some of you anyway, and you want to believe that what you did was valid, which it was, because you were brave enough to fight. However, in the big picture, the president made a mistake, in my estimation. Marilyn, George, your opinion counts. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael. Did the war in Iraq, did it matter? Did it count? I say yes. One thing we got as a country was respect. Respect
from who? Wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. George, please. We got respect from who?
From the Muslim world, in my humble opinion.
You think the Muslim world is afraid of America now?
Not at the current, because I believe because of our current president, who wants to sit down and talk and not use military power when it's necessary. To keep that respect that we've rightly earned.
It's an interesting proposal you're making. I think what you're saying is that the initial success of the U.S. military in decimating Saddam's forces showed the awesome power and organizational skills of the U.S. Army. There's no question about it, right? I mean, that we all agree upon, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, that I can agree with you. In other words, yeah, anyone knows that they're going to tangle with the U.S. military, and if the U.S. military actually is unleashed on them, they're going to lose. I agree with that, but since that time, have you seen an example of such force being used? I have not.
Well, unfortunately, I believe that we've had the last 2 years of telling the whole world that, well, all we really want to do is just get out of Iraq for political purposes, and they're just waiting us out. And as we leave, they know we no longer have the will to use our power and our might of our military.
All right, my friend George, what about Iran? Why are we in? I'm sorry, pardon me. Why are we in Afghanistan? What are we doing there?
Oh, that's a tough one. Because I really don't see what the benefit of Afghanistan.
If you were to poll 100,000 educated, intelligent Americans, they could not answer the question of what we're doing in Afghanistan. Nobody knows why we're there. Why are we there?
I'll say again, with the only exception that we punch back, and they again see, and we have a presence, a footprint. In the area, and I think to a certain degree it keeps the Muslim world.
But George, we're bankrupt. The nation is financially in ruins, not primarily, but partially because of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, which have cost trillions of dollars. Wars are expensive. They have bankrupted nations in the past. It is the most serious thing a president can do is go to war, as well as retreat from a war field. The most serious thing a president can do is send men to die in combat or withdraw men from a place where they should be fighting. And so what I'm suggesting is, this is very, very important people understand, we're bankrupt as a nation because of thieves at the top who have bankrupted us and because of wars, endless wars. How long has the Afghanistan war gone on now? 10 years?
Yes.
Why? What are we doing there? There are more terrorists, so-called, than all the troops we could ever muster to send to Afghanistan. There's an endless supply of these throwbacks. So what do we do? I don't understand what we're doing. A nation building? They're never going to be a democracy. They never were. Afghanistan is another invented nation. You know that historically there was never an Afghanistan, correct?
Correct.
There was no Afghanistan. There was no Iraq. These are inventions of the West. They were made up out of whole cloth. They were carved out of the land by the colonial powers. What are we doing there? I don't know what we're doing there. I still don't know what we're doing there. I tell you the truth, we could go on and on with this, and many of you will say it was worth it. Many of you will say it wasn't. My position is it was not. However, I'd like to take a few more calls on it. I do not believe we gained any respect whatsoever, by the way. I think the opposite is true. So I'll take your calls. New York, Fred, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hey, Mr. Savage, how you doing, Bobby? Listen, I'm from South Jamaica, New York, Queens. And Jamaica High School.
Fred, please, Fred, tell me about the war. Was the war worth it, please? Tell us that.
Waste of energy. The waste of our youth, and I'm a World War II veteran, combat infantry veteran.
God bless you. God bless you. You're the right stuff. But from your perspective, it was not worth it. Is that correct, Fred?
There's not. That's 100 Arabs wouldn't compare to one GI. You realize the agony and the hurt that they could have by killing these American men, and I feel every politician, whoever serves in the American, say they want to run for office, they want to
yes.
be president. I
yes.
wish to God they would go for 2 weeks in the blood and guts and body parts in combat, and they're shooting their mouths off what they know and what they can do. They don't know. Poop. You know this our president here. He should go back to school and learn something, because he's...
Fred, I hear you. Fred, you're a great guy. Where did you fight in World War II?
I fought in south of Aachen, into Dusseldorf. We liberated Dusseldorf, and the mayor of Dusseldorf...
Did you fight in the Hurston Forest? Fred, did you fight in the Hurston Forest?
Yeah, close to it, babe.
And what were you in the what were you in the tanks or what?
No, I was an infantry sergeant, buck sergeant.
Worse yet, you were fighting in the cold, 10 degree below weather. You had to dig a foxhole in that weather.
We lost 25,000 men in the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, my God. People have no idea the number of men that were lost in a single battle. I mean, it's bad enough hearing that 4,400 men lost their lives in Iraq, but we have no idea what kind of sacrifices were made in World War II. I can't imagine how you guys got through it. How did you live through such cold, Fred?
Imagine how these guys are coming home now from Iraq.
No, but Fred, listen to me. How did you, I'm interested in your story in war. How did you live through such cold, plain and simple cold in World War II? How did you live in it as an infantryman?
It was a bitch, to be honest with you. It was the first thing we do would hit a German town, not so much the French or the Belgians. There were allies with us, but the German town, we'd go looking for booze. We had to get the edge off at night because there's 24/7 stress.
Yes.
I got PTSD for 40 years. I never knew it.
They didn't let you know it. You weren't allowed to express it in those days. Oh, today, if you had a drink after a battle, they call you up for a court-martial. They tell you to have a marijuana cigarette instead.
Move a minefield, you know. I mean, and they had no holiday.
You know, Fred, I had an old friend. He must be 90 years old today. You have to be 90, aren't you?
87, babe.
How old are you?
87.
Fred, what is your ethnic background? What are you made of? You're made of iron.
Polish, but both side immigrants who learned
strong as iron to live through it. I knew a guy, an older guy. He told me that he was in a similar situation as you in the infantry, and he said when the 88s were coming over, it sounded like railroad cars were flying overhead. He had to hide in a barn. Listen to this: during an artillery barrage, he said there was a dead cow. He cut the guts open. And he hid inside a dead cow during an artillery barrage. Would you believe it?
I know. I was trying to go through concrete. I got caught. That's what caused my problems. I got pinned down. The Germans had a monastery on top of a mountaintop in Siegburg, Germany.
And yeah.
They put a 50-foot by 100-foot Red Cross flag. So our Air Force respected that.
Oh.
You understand?
Yes.
But there was an observation post. The bastards could see every part of the valley.
Yeah.
And then when we came in, they even the civilians, the German civilians, you know what they did? I saw this woman at 5:30 in the morning put down dry clothes on a clothesline.
Yeah.
That was a signal that the Americans are in the village.
And oh, my God.
This artillery came down, and I was pinned down. I don't know how long I was in shock. I could not move. I was frozen in fear. I was an 18-year-old kid just out of New York.
Yeah, none of us can understand what it's like to sit there with shells bursting around you with such phenomenal destructive force. The noise, the ground shaking, the shrapnel, the concrete flying, the dead bodies, the other boys screaming. I can't imagine what it did to you.
No one, you can't, many doctors ask me, what was it like? I can't explain it. I've been through 3.5 years of meditation and cognitive therapy at the VA.
Yeah.
I've been through 20 electric shock treatments. I've been through, I picked up art in a observation room for 30 days before.
Interesting.
I went to the shock treatments. Because they exhausted their experiments and experiments.
What is it that they were trying to treat you for when you say you have PTSD? What do you mean?
I had shell shock. I had depression. I had the worst depression. I wanted to commit suicide, but I got a wife and two little kids home. I couldn't do it because I was. That's the trouble with Obama. He had no daddy like I had no daddy. My daddy died from booze during the depression.
Mm.
And he lost his business, so he started drinking. He turned into a real
Fred,
general.
You're an American hero to millions of people listening to the show today. And, you know, it's callers like you that make my life and my broadcast life worth it. Fred, stay on the line. I'm going to send you a gift, a book for you. Maybe you'll enjoy reading it. Maybe you'll give it away. Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Crazy, crazy times. We're living through crazy times. Believe me, I'm not the only one who sees it. I mean, the war is over. And what? What did we gain for it? No one knows. Now, in New York, there's a terrible story. Career criminal, North Carolina, comes up to New York. Cop goes to a domestic violence call. The minute he walks through the door, this animal shoots him in the face and kills him. That's bad enough. Then it turns out that the judge who had released him was as competent to become a judge as my dog Teddy is. In fact, I think my dog Teddy in a black robe would probably have had more common sense than this judge is. So I looked her up. Judge, all rise, Judge Evelyn LaPorte. I said, how did she become a judge? And I was shocked to learn that she came to America as an immigrant, spoke no English to begin with, had to learn English. Then she was, well, why don't you listen to the story from clip four? Play it for them.
My father was a sugarcane field worker for all his life. My mother used to work with, as a domestic person, working for middle class and rich people in Puerto Rico, cleaning and cooking.
And they turned her into a judge because, after all, you have to have diversity. This is how it was in communist China, where Mao Zedong took the surgeons out of the surgical ward and put them in the laundry, and took laundresses and put them into the surgical ward and said, you will now be a surgeon. And if any of the young women who had been laundresses complained and said, but I don't know how to perform surgery, they were shot as counter-revolutionaries. If you think we're not living through a communist revolution, you don't even understand history. That's how you wound up with a judge called Evelyn LaPorte. So today, she's so ashamed of herself, she doesn't even show up to her court. I say she should be tried as an accessory to murder, by the way. She certainly should be stripped of her robe. Look, the fact of the matter is, anyone can make a mistake. And what's another cop in New York City, right? Is that your opinion? Anyone can make a mistake? You're wrong. She never should have been a judge in the first place.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We've been talking about has the war in Iraq been worth it? And I was referring back to my book, Liberalism as a Mental Disorder, where I feared that Bush made a huge error and that he was just supersizing Iran. And I said, here's where the military miscalculation factors into the picture. Bush and his band of neocons have had this ambitious fantasy of transforming Iraq into America light. However, visions of a democracy in Baghdad may be short-sighted. The Iraqi Shiites are the majority in parliament, and they want an Islamic republic. What you may not know is that Saddam Hussein was vehemently opposed to an Islamic republic. He was a Stalinist and a dictator, but he was not an Islamist, and he fought them. He kept them under his thumb. So we liberated the devil, and what we now have is what? Our friends? Are you crazy? I believe the opposite is true, and it's a terrible thing to have to say, but I don't believe our newly liberated Shiite friends are our friends. And that's one big topic. It was a Carter, just like Jimmy Carter's mistake with the Shah. Again, human rights. If that's what Bush was driven by, I don't even know if that's true. I have no idea what he was driven by. It's hard to know what a president is driven by. I think, you know, the advisors are so multifaceted and so diverse, and all of the angles pushing at a president, God only knows where the decision ultimately derives. I don't know where it derived from. Was it human rights? Was it corrupt contracting? God only knows what the reasons were. a real fear of WMDs that didn't exist. I don't know, but I know it was a disaster and not worth it. And the $1 trillion or more that it's cost us, $2 trillion, God only knows how much. What have we gotten for it? What have we gotten for it? Okay. 1-800-449-OPEN-MIC to Mike. We're moving on to bigger topics on the Savage Nation. Iraq is still a good topic because Nancy Pelosi is saying that Obama gets credit for ending the war in Iraq, which I think is quite cynical. And then we're talking about things as trivial as neti pots, because a person used one of these fantasies in the south of the United States and died of a protozoal infection from the water that she put into the pot. So be very careful of some of these alternative medical treatments. And I am a proponent of most alternative medicine. And I myself use mega doses of vitamins on a daily basis and have for well over 40 years. I consider myself lucky to have grown up as a student of the greatest geniuses in the history of alternative medicine, Linus Pauling, Ewan Cameron, and most importantly to me, the great one, MD, PhD, Abe Hoffer, one of the great minds of our time, who you never heard of. Never hear from him. The man is a great hero. You never heard from him because he never sought publicity, and he never sought to capitalize on what he discovered. He actually discovered in 1951 that large doses of niacin reverse, you know, the mixed up cholesterol figures that most of us suffer from. And he could have patented niacin in that form, and he didn't. He said, "Why should I patent something that people can use for free? For a few pennies," and he gave it to the public trust. He was a Canadian, by the way, very good, great man. So I mean, I've written health books. Many of you have read them, going way back to 1972 when I wrote Earth Medicine, Earth Foods. I don't know if you know, in 1975, it's interesting. I was like Johnny Appleseed. I wrote a book called Plant a Tree: A Guide to Regreening America. So I've always been interested in kind of healing society, making it a better place. And you all say, "Well, aren't you a natural liberal then? Why aren't you with the progressive? They believe in all of these things, do they? Are you sure?" The so-called progressives are the most anti-alternative medicine people on the planet. They are the establishmentarians of our time. Many of them border on the neo-fascists that we have all been told to fear. But there's no point in generalizing any further, because you've heard it all before from myself and from others. So let's go to the callers. Iraq is a story. The other stories are a big deal. I'm not going to talk about the debate last night because I didn't watch it. I'm sick of it. I don't want to hear one more debate. Never again. Please get the election over with. Please take this election and shove it. I've had enough of it already. I can't take it anymore. They're destroying people's interest in it. Here's another story. Biomedical research using chimps curtailed. Great. Bravo. A new report says, well, play clip 26 and 7.
There is a fairly rapid trajectory towards a decreasing necessity in the use of chimpanzees, and we can see in a relatively near term where we might not need them at all. We don't have a crystal ball, so we don't know what may come in the future in terms of an emerging new infection or a re-emerging infection. Now, that's a very, very high bar. And in fact, a much higher bar than is currently in place for the use of chimpanzees.
Basically, they're giving up the use of chimpanzees in medical research. Frankly, I think it's a good idea. And you say, well, come on, how are we going to have breakthroughs? Well, I don't want to bore you with the details, but I actually worked in biomedical research for a number of years, and I lost my first fellowship because I refused to kill animals. I don't think you know that. I never talk about it because you say, well, he's a conservative. He must like to torture animals. No, I found the liberals in the lab like to torture little creatures. I didn't. Did you ever hear that story? Shall I enlighten you as to who I actually am as opposed to the lies promulgated by the enemies of truth? I'll tell you the story. Oh, no, it's boring. I won't tell you the story. I'll summarize it. My fellowship was $300 a month. That was my entire income. So I go in the laboratory. It was a pharmacology laboratory. I'll never forget it. And the lab director was a real SOB, a mean, mean, mean SOB. And he had a midget working there. I remember her name. I won't tell it to you. And she liked to snuff animals. It was like a Frankenstein. She would talk to them and then kill them for research, so-called. But she got off on killing them. So he said to me, well, you got to kill the animals, too, if you're going to work in my lab. I said, I'm not killing those mice. I won't do it. He said, well, you're in research. You got to kill animals. I said, no, I won't do it. He says, all right. He says, well, you got to clean the cages then. So, well, I was getting a master's degree, and my job was to clean crap out of a cage. Well, I wouldn't kill animals and I wouldn't clean the refuse. In fact, I heard my deceased father talking to me, and he said to me, this is what you went to graduate school for? This is what your ancestors suffered deprivation for? That you could be man-child in the promised land and wind up cleaning crap in a rat cage? That was my father's voice. He had died somewhere around that time talking to me. I heard, you know, you talk about ancestors talking to you. I told you I used to have a conversation with the dead in that regard. Is it really the dead? Is he really talking? No, is what you're thinking what he would have said to you. So I told the professor, I said, I can't do this. I won't do it. So he said, and he knew it was my only income. He said, well, you're fired. Get out of the program. So this was fate. You see, I've told you that fate has a strange way of acting. I left the pharmacology laboratory and I wandered down into the basement of the hospital I was working in. Leahy Hospital in Honolulu, Hawaii. I remember it as long as I live. And I wound in the basement and I saw jars and jars of herbs in jars in showcases. I didn't know what they were. They looked interesting to me. I'd always been an antiquarian and I was interested in these jars of herbs. So I knocked on the door of the professor and I said, well, what are those? He said, well, those are herbs and someone collects them for us and we analyze them in the laboratory for medicines. I said, my God, who does that? What field of science is that? He said, well, that's called ethnobotany. And he named the professor who was in Samoa with his wife and young child, who had gotten a small grant to live in Samoa, which I thought was romantic, and talk to the folk healers and collect the herbs and document them and send them back for research. I said, I'm going into ethnobotany. Well, I became a world-famous ethnobotanist. My master's thesis was published in its entirety in a Harvard University journal. Don't try to take it away from me, fool. You'll be way over your head if you do. And I went into ethnobotany, and I found out that, like everything else, it was just a pipe dream because there's nothing romantic about sitting on your behind in a cold village on a straw mat talking to folk healers. It sounded better on paper than it did in reality. In other words, I'm an idealist, so it was another romantic quest. Nevertheless, I did some very good work over a number of years, and that was how I got into ethnomedicine, ethnobotany, and was a long trajectory into radio. Although I was a pioneer and way ahead of my time in many of these fields, I committed the horrible crime of having been born in a body of a white male, and therefore I was unhirable by the geniuses in the universities where only women and unqualified people of all stripes need apply, which is why the universities have degenerated today, because men like me were driven away from most departments. But it was actually to my benefit. What you don't understand is that trail of tears made me desperate, and it would have broken another man. But apparently I have something in me that wouldn't quit. I wouldn't quit, and believe me, I was close to the edge. I almost went over the edge many times. Young children, no income. I didn't know what to do with myself, and so I had to find other ways to survive, and it led me to radio eventually. And that should be a moral of the story to everyone listening. Never quit. So long as you draw a breath, you can go on. It's a matter of willpower, the will to survive. You can even overcome social engineering. Believe me, if your ancestors could have lived through the Middle Ages, why can't you live through the society of our time? Are you really suffering? I mean, what, are you shivering at night, wearing newspaper on your feet? Are you really starving? Have you ever missed a meal? Of course not. So in terms of the sweep of human history, you're not really suffering at all. You just don't have the super luxuries that you dream you're entitled to. It's nothing. Nothing whatsoever. And if you want the luxuries, then you have to find a way to get them. And that means you have to work harder and you have to provide a service or a product that people want. It's as simple as that. Now let's move on to worthless topics like politics. Okay. No chimps anymore. Still using dog. Oh, God, no. Jim in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, they use little beagles in these
Where?
Pharmaceutical places.
Yes, I've seen some of those pictures where they blind the dogs with cosmetics to test products. They make the beagles blind. So a woman can walk around looking alluring on Manhattan, in Manhattan's worst streets.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Horrible. Horrible torturing a dog. Horrible torturing anything. What do you think it is, China? Where they raise dogs to eat them? This is not China. This is America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So I not talk about the race anymore. You know, give me a break and let's just have the election already. What country do I live in? What, the media is the country I live in? That's where the election is occurring? 1,000 people in Iowa, 1,000 people in New Hampshire are telling me who will be the president. I'm disgusted with the whole political structure. I want the election to be over with already, and I know I'm not alone. That's all. I'm sick of it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, let me vote already. What country am I in? I feel like I'm watching it from another nation. I'm sure you feel the same way. Everyone but you counts, right? Romney, Gingrich, Santorum, Bachman, Perry, this one, that one. You know, your head's spinning from it already. The only one winning is Obama because they're cutting each other's throat every day, which is exactly what the media wants. So therefore, I just talked about it again, and I said I wouldn't, but I guess I have to once in a while. I wish it was over with. Where's Herman Cain? He's on a singing tour, I guess. Georgia. John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Georgia's on my mind. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. I heard you mention the neti pot, and I was curious, exactly what are the risks associated with that?
Very good question. Very clearly stated. A report, I'm trying to find it. In the bottom right of michaelsavage.com, neti pots can kill you from live science. Now, of course, it doesn't mean every time you use such a invention or apparatus, rather. But a brain-eating amoeba entered the person's sinuses and then penetrated their brain because the water was not sterile water. You follow me?
So if you're using, obviously, tap water would be out of the question.
That's exactly right. Both victims filled their neti pots with tap water instead of manufacturer-recommended distilled or sterilized water. And when they used these pots to force the water up their noses and flush out their sinus cavities, which is a treatment for colds and hay fever, a deadly amoeba living in the tap water called Naegleria fowleri worked its way from their sinuses into their brains. And the organism infected the victim's brains with a neurological disease called primary amoebic meningoencephalitis, which rapidly destroys neural tissue and typically kills sufferers in a matter of days, and it happened to them. So I suppose you can continue to use your neti pot, but make certain that you use distilled or sterilized water, not heated tap water.
Okay, yes, okay.
All right, that's all I wanted to say. I mean, I would never stick a neti pot in my nose. It's the idea of the water running all over my face and down my neck. What's wrong with Dristan? Or you know, Sudafed works pretty good too on your sinuses. I'll tell you what really works is boil a pot of spaghetti. You know the Italian women, they allegedly have good skin. Why? Because when they cook pasta, which I do every time, I don't make pasta as much as I used to. When you drain the water, did you know that the secret what you're supposed to do when you pour it over the colander? You're supposed to stand over the steam that rises up from the colander. That's one folk rumor as to why Italian women have nice skin. So it cleans your sinuses out as too. You don't want it dripping into the pasta, obviously, but it's a nice feeling. Try it next time you drain pasta. Stand over the steam that arises. It smells good, feels good. You get a twofer. You get the spaghetti smell, and you get your sinuses cleaned, and your face feels good. What's wrong with that? Crazy, the world's nuts. I mean, look, everybody would like to use less drugs, and I'm all for it. But that doesn't mean you have to go now take a bath in the Ganges River to purify your soul. I mean, you want to swim in that swamp. I remember years ago in the 60s, some schmuck poet, Allen Ginsberg, a nobody, a hype artist, used to say, send pictures back. He bathed in the Ganges River like he purified his filthy communist boy-loving soul. Yeah, because he bathed in the Ganges River. What do you think he went to India for? You think he went for the Ganges River? He went because the people were so poor that he could buy prostitutes for 15 rupees. That's what he went for, like all the liberals on these grants. What do you think they go to the third world for? You see these studies? They found a distinct study that the use of alcohol increases the risk of AIDS transmission. You hear? You know how much that must have cost you from the NIH? They went to Thailand and studied it in gay bars, which is that they found out that men who drink more engage in riskier sex. What'd that cost you, $3 million? Look at the garbage that the money is spent on, my God.
Savage.
Big Do you believe how late it is on a Friday already? Most normal people are not listening to talk radio. It's only people like you that make me famous and rich. No, the average person's not interested in any of this. You think they care about Iraq, Afghanistan? You think they care that the U.S. government helped hide climate data in order to fudge it and make it look like there's global warming? You think they care about the billions of dollars going to fake solar companies under Obama? Do you think that they care about Iran hijacking the spy drone? Do you think that they care about any of this? They don't. They're just ignorant. They don't care. And I don't blame them in a certain way. Ignorance is power. In the new America, in the brave new world, ignorance is power. Paying attention to talentless women with ultra-large derrières and overly large lips with ultra-long names is really what's important. You don't want to know anything about reality. What you want to do is pay attention to talentless fat women who get married for publicity, or people with wigs from New York who are on talent shows. This is what's important. I can't even open up the New York Post website anymore. I used to enjoy it. I won't open it anymore. Every time I open it now, I try to see news. I can't look at it anymore. I will not open the New York Post website. It's again, the same thing. Every day it's a story about one of those talentless women whose father was a lawyer, a failed lawyer for O.J. Simpson at that. What do you want to talk about? Iraq. It's open mic to mic. Chimps, not using chimps. Biomedical research using chimps, curtailed, good thing. I really admire people who have animal rescue havens. In fact, we give money to a chimp haven in Florida. I feel bad for them. What did they ask to be turned into, to be tortured like in a concentration camp? It's not that there hasn't been useful research conducted. I mean, be a fool to know that that was true, particularly in the 40s and 50s and in the 60s. But, you know, in the recent years, there's less and less need for animals in research. They can use computer models. So there it is. You don't really need animals for research. It's just not what it once was. They manhandle and they treat them like less than animals. You ever see an animal in a cage being tortured? You think they feel nothing? Have you seen an animal in a cage? You think a chimpanzee doesn't feel anything? You think it doesn't know that its mate is being tortured in a cage next door? Well, all right, you're mistaken if you think that. You know how sensitive animals are. Just touch a dog and you know how sensitive an animal is. Very interesting, the whole world. I guess as you get older, you get more sensitive. Isn't that odd? Instead of becoming, some people, I guess, this is an interesting thing, is that some people, as they get older, they become more, less feeling, embittered. They develop a shell. And other people, as they get older, they become more sensitive. The shell that they had somehow is worn off, or do they throw it off? I don't know. Have you noticed? That's an interesting question. Do you live longer if you feel more, or do you live longer if you feel less? How about that guy who just died, that big mouth? May he rest in wherever he went. Hitchens. Died a horrible death of esophageal cancer. He's the one who wrote that there is no God, and he's an atheist. And I guess he went to his grave insisting there was no God. Well, good for him. I suppose that there's nothing more you can say about a thing like that. You never, ever do you condemn the dead. I mean, I wouldn't do it. No matter what they stood for in life, you know, all right, that's his problem, not mine. Although I once got in trouble when I first started in radio. It's a very famous story. There was a newspaper columnist I hated here. A gossip columnist. Well, when I came along, he was threatened by me because I made big waves in San Francisco on the station. So he started to write hateful things about me. Years later, he died. And I ran, I said, today Herb Cain died. And there was a sound of running water that I ran as a soundbite on the show. And I said, that is the sound of me over Herb Cain's grave. Well, they went crazy. They went crazy. The then mayor, Willie Brown, how dare you, he's my friend. No one even remembers him anymore. He was a nobody. Just a self-important nobody. Stood for nothing. Never left a legacy of any kind. Not one word he ever wrote will be remembered. Not one. That was the rare exception where I mocked the dead, because you have to be very careful. But other than that, no matter who the person was, you try never to say anything bad about the dead. It's a superstition that they're going to haunt you or something. They haunted you in life. Why shouldn't they haunt you in death? I mean, they haunted you in life. Why can't they haunt? I mean, think about it. It's logical. If they haunted you while they were alive, why can't they haunt you for the next world? And even if there is no next world, they're going to haunt you anyway because you're afraid that there's a next world and they're going to haunt you from it. So it's best to be nice. It's a new adage. Be nice. Be nice. Are there nice pills? Does anyone make a nice pill? They make a pill to lower your cholesterol, another pill to lower your anxiety, another one to lower or to raise your male prowess, another one to increase your hair. But is there a pill to make you nice? It could calm you down, but does that make you nice if you're calm? I don't know if people are nice when they're calm. Some people are worse when they're calm. I'd rather have them angry and real than calm and backstabbing. You know what I'm saying? Get out of here already. What's this? What are they obsessed with the death of a band guy in Florida? Every other day I turn the show on, another thing about bullying. God, the heroes are dead in Iraq and Afghanistan. I got to hear about a guy who throws a thing in the air with it looks like a... What is this bullying? Where'd they come up with these words? Inclusive, bullying, all these words. It's like a religion. A religion I don't ascribe to, incidentally. Judge gives Barry Bonds house arrest and delays it. He never should have gotten any punishment whatsoever. They tortured this guy. Somebody went after him on a vendetta on Barry Bonds thing. I'm not a sports guy, but I mean, this was wrong. This was the whole case was an example of courts gone wild. Barry Bonds gets 2-year probation plus house arrest. What did he actually do? Conviction of obstructing justice, stemming from charges that he intentionally misled an 03 grand jury investigating the Balco steroid scandal. Okay, so he lied. Was it worth all these years in a court? These millions of dollars given to these vultures with law degrees? No, absolutely not. Look at the real crimes in this country. The billions of dollars stolen under the guise of fake global warming. You'll never see the light of day. Or $1.2 billion is missing. Corzine gets up, doesn't know where it is, with a straight face and very sympathetic, too. Don't know where it is. I have no idea where it was moved. It was juggled. Although I'm involved and I'm the CEO and I gambled and I personally made the bets. I personally didn't know who was making the bets on my behalf. Although I bought the euro bonds, I actually didn't touch the euro bonds. And although I was involved in the transfer of the monies, I had no idea that there were monies. I thought I was just playing. I thought it was Monopoly. I have no idea where the money is. Ask him. He just got indicted. I never saw him, even though I hired him, even though we worked together at Goldman Sachs. I never met him. He was never any good. I never liked him. I don't know who he is. How dare you put me in the same Senate hearing room as him? I'm very sorry that farmers and other idiots, I mean, other fools gave me the money to gamble with. We have no idea where the $1.2 billion, and I feel your pain. And although I'm a Democrat, it was once with Goldman Sachs and then a governor of the state of New Jersey, I went into something where the real money was because Willie Sutton taught me go where the money is. That's why I rob banks. Is there anything else I can say for you today to make your day happy? Idaho, Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to tell you this. I'm glad I got through. I was in a motorcycle accident 10 years ago, and that's when I started listening to you. And I got paralyzed in the accident.
Ugh.
And they put me on Paxil because of my depression, of course.
Awful.
And I was on Paxil for 10 years.
Oh, boy.
And what it did is it leveled out all my emotions. I couldn't even feel. I couldn't feel anything. I was just a zombie, just a living zombie. Anyway, I was through listening to your show, and you got me started with the idea of getting off of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I did, just gradually, little bit by little. I kept dividing my pill and just kept getting off. I finally got off of it.
Yeah.
After 10 years, and my life is totally different now.
But wait, why did you get off Paxil? What motivated you to get off Paxil?
Because I noticed I didn't feel anything all of a sudden. You know, you were saying what the effects of those kind of drugs do.
Oh, I alerted you to the side effects, and you weren't aware of it until I pointed it out.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I had a positive effect. You never know who you're affecting. Let's go back to the big question of the day. Was the war in Iraq worth all of the dead, all of the injured, and the trillions of dollars that went up in smoke? My answer is no. My answer is we've supersized Iran. We've supersized the Shia presence in that region. A disastrous mistake. It was Bush's greatest blunder, one of the greatest blunders in military history. My opinion. Your opinion counts. Peter in New York on WOR. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I agree with you. The reason being is that there was a public bid, $3 billion, for the Iraqi pipeline, and it was pulled off and awarded to Halliburton, and another $2 billion was given to pump the oil out, which I believe went to Japan, not to us. And it's funny because...
How could Bush have gotten away with this gigantic lie when he said in the beginning... people say, okay, rightly so, that he lied about WMDs. He could have been wrong about it, but he may not have been lying. But he said that we will have reparations in the form of oil after we liberate the Iraqis. We've not seen one cup of oil from those ingrateful people. Those ungrateful people, the ingrates in Iraq, have not been forced to give us a barrel of oil.
Right. And in addition, you know, it's funny, Dan Rather, who I think I used to detest him, He tried to publicize that there was no weapons of mass destruction, and he got speared.
He got destroyed for that.
Right.
That's right. He never recovered. I think he's teaching media studies at an Arkansas junior high school now.
The last thing.
That's what happens. One mistake in this business, and you're finished. You're toast. It's all over. It's a terrible thing. It really is. I mean, after all, he was a terrible newsman to begin with. How about that other one, Tom Brokaw? I love when they interview each other. They can't just retire and go away and teach in Arkansas in a junior high. Why do they have to come back and interview each other? I'm Tom Brokaw. They're so in love with themselves. I can't even look at myself in the mirror right now. Thank God I'm in radio. I had the skin cancer, or the pre-things again burnt off my head. It looks like someone put an iron on the side of my head. I have a nightmare about it. You know, it's a funny how your subconscious, why you need so much sleep. The more you do during a day, the more you have to sort in your sleep. You have to dream it out. It's an amazing thing, but I dreamed that my whole head was not just the part that was actually burned with the whatever she used to burn, but my forehead was burned down to my nose. You know how you exaggerate. So thank God I'm not on television. I have to use makeup, and I don't have to do any of that. Radio is wonderful. It's wonderful. My tooth is healed. 2 years of torment. It was 2 years almost to the day that I had dinner with Romney. Ooh, I shouldn't have said it. Ooh, I shouldn't have said that. I'm liable to post a picture of me and Romney dining alone together in San Francisco. Ooh, we had a very nice conversation, but I had just had dental surgery at the time. And I was so excited. It was an implant in my front tooth. I went home that night, and my housekeeper had bought some hard Italian bread. I started talking about Romney and how a great guy, nice guy. I broke the tooth. I snapped the stem right off. It was 2 years now of hell, of recovery. No, you wouldn't. Even a tooth could drive you crazy. You know, now, I just a little thing like that, a tooth. Then the other guy, what mistakes he made and the pain. And if another one broke. Eating just nothing, and now it's like a rock, like iron. After I'm gone, the only thing that'll be left, it will be everything will be gone except the implanted bone that they put in from the cadaver. And the nightmare is, it's stronger than the regular part of my jaw. This is the paradox of it all. They put an implanted bone in order to make, because once the bone went, he had to put in fake bone. And I told him, never use cadaver bone, because my luck, it'll be a communist transvestite, you know, corpse from the Bowery. They'll use that cadaver bone in me. I don't know whose cadaver bone is in my head. I mean, sometimes I wake up and wonder, is it, am I dreaming my dreams or the cadaver's dream? No, it's sterilized. It's sterilized, sterilized liquefied product. I don't think it's actually a piece of a bone from the guy's hip. Can you imagine? Some rummy they find on the Bowery. Some guy, a needle user. Some junkie that they find. They have a stiff. They cut a bone out of him. And they sell it to a dentist in India who sterilizes it in a neti pot in his backyard and ships it and ships it over to America in some, you know, purified cadaver bone for dental use only. You have to laugh in the face of it. Otherwise, what are you going to do? The day you stop laughing at it, you become a Democrat. The day you can no longer, the day you are no longer able to laugh at the vicissitudes of life, or at the insanity of the lies coming out of the mouths of the Democrats, you are fit for nothing but to work for the Obama administration in the Energy Department. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
Savage Nation. I see that representatives of Congress cannot say a Merry Christmas in any mailing paid for with tax dollars. Can you believe what's going on in our country today, what the atheist vermin have done to this country? You can't say, you have to say Happy Holidays. So I go out of my way now and I say Merry Christmas to everyone I run into to make them uncomfortable. It's as though I'm cursing. They look around, you see their head, and you say, Hi, Merry Christmas. And you see, like, doormen in buildings. Ooh, they look around like they're going to be arrested by, Happy Holidays, they reply. Can you imagine what has happened to our country as a result of the verminous liberals? The God-hating, family-hating, flag-hating, police-hating, military-hating rats, what they've done to this country. Hey, if I'm the last man on radio to be saying this till I shut the pipeline off, I'll say it till the last day. Look what the God-hating, family-hating, police-hating, military-hating, church-hating, flag-stomping vermin have done to your country. God, it gives me a good feeling to say that. Let me take a quick call. Will in Houston, Texas, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I wanted to thank you for your knowledge in the pharmaceutical industry. I was basically fell into the trap of listening to doctors about cholesterol, Lipitor, Tricor. I was highly elevated in both. After listening to you and the explanations and reading about him, I had muscle fatigue.
Yep.
I got off of him. And
right, so that's right. There's a price to be paid. In other words, so your cholesterol numbers look better.
So I've had two back surgeries. I was told that I needed to be on muscle relaxers and painkillers.
Yeah.
And
they turned you into a legal junkie, in other words, because there's money in drugs. It's horrible. Horrible. Do without them. Learn to live without them. Some can be life-saving and some can be life-threatening. Understand that all drugs have side effects. The interactions between multiple drugs are unknown. And you're playing with a cocktail that you may not even understand. The doctors don't even know the interactions. You know, there's a Chinese medical clinic up in San Francisco in North Beach. There's always a line around the block. We don't know if the citizens, non-citizens, no one checks. They're running in and out all day long for prescriptions for pills. You know why? Because you pay for them, you dumb idiot, you. And that's just one clinic out of thousands across America. Why do you think that they were bankrupt? Medicare, Medicaid, are you crazy? Do you have any idea how much of this is just fraud? Yeah, it's just a mill like in Florida. But in Florida, they're busting some of these drug mills, not in California. No such investigation. Here, they're still looking for people who don't agree with the warmists, that there's global warming. That's soon going to be a crime in the state of California. But medical mills, hey, open another one as long as they can vote while they're here. Chinese friend of mine says to me, have you seen what's going on in the motor vehicle bureaus? All the languages, he said, to get a license? So I said to him, Johnny, I said 15 years ago on my radio show, I called the DMV what it is. He said, what's that? The Department of Mexican Voting. Well, he got a kick out of that one. The DMV, Department of Mexican Voting. Thank Janet Reno for that one. The motor voter law. That was the end of legal voting in the United States of America. Another illegal Democrat destroyed everything that your ancestors died for. The ballot box. Have a nice one. I'll be right back.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
With this act, because of the bravery of our troops, the sacrifices of their families, and the leadership of President Obama, we are able to say the war in Iraq is over.
To hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Troops are coming home for the holidays with their families. President Obama promised to end the war in Iraq responsibly. Promise made, promise kept. 150,000 troops were in Iraq when President Obama took office. That number will now be reduced to just a couple thousand.
Be merry and bright.
Well, here are some of the topics today. The biggest one is, was the war in Iraq worth the price that the U.S. paid? As of today, at least 4,485 U.S. servicemen had died in the Iraq war since it began in March of 2003, according to AP studies. This figure includes 9 military civilians killed in action. Of that number, at least 3,527 military personnel died as a result of hostile action. Now, since the start of U.S. military operations in Iraq, 32,226 U.S. service members have been wounded in hostile action, according to the Defense Department's weekly tally. So, roughly 4,500 dead, roughly 32,000 wounded. And what did we get for it? The question of the day is, do you think the war in Iraq was worth the price that the U.S. paid? How much did it cost? Well, the government says $823 billion. I don't believe it. I believe it's far higher than that. I think it's in the trillions of dollars. And we'll never know the true cost. Never. I mean, I can give you one example after another. But the contractors have stolen billions of dollars. Now, let's go to michaelsavage.com for all of the latest news headlines. If you're still interested in the news, and I don't blame you if you're not. Top right, oh my God, conspiracy to fake warming uncovered with the Department of Energy directly tied to the big lie. Read it. Read it. Tell it to your warmest friends. Diplomat in Miami linked to Iran-Venezuela cyber terror plot. SEC charges former Fannie Freddie execs with fraud. They're the low-hanging fruit. An affirmative action judge in New York City released the felon who killed a cop. She didn't show up for work today, Miss LaPorte. She came to America from Puerto Rico and worked her way up the chain. And they turned her into a judge. Can you believe this? You got to read this story. Only 43% would reelect Obama. Now that we're leaving Iraq, guess what? We're selling them 140 M1 Abrams tanks and 36 F-16s. I guess Iran needs them. Godfather of the left gives $550 million to liberal causes. You heard me right. $550 million to undermine freedom. Gingrich defends big fee from Freddie Mac. Sure. You heard of a Big Mac, didn't you? He invented it. Gingrich invented the Big Mac.
Should you, as AFL-CIO president, pay more in taxes as president?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you don't think you're paying your fair share right now?
I pay more than my fair share, I'm sure. But do I need to pay more? Yes. Do people at the bottom need a break? Yes. Do people at the top need to have more tax breaks? No. That's a system that doesn't work. Look, you know it. If taxes were voluntary, who would pay taxes? The rich ought to be taxed more. That's a plain, simple statement. They're not paying their fair share. They ought to pay more.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. Tea Party leader, shocked by arrest on gun charges at New York's LaGuardia Airport. Go read that story. Obama can declare you a terrorist and detain you forever. Read it. It's on michaelsavage.com from the London Guardian. I didn't make it up. Democrats turn viciously anti-Semitic, with charges going back to the protocols of the Elders of Zion. How any Jew can still vote D is beyond me. Holder targets America's only sheriff to crack down on illegal aliens. Drone inside Iran. How did they get it? Is there a spy inside the U.S. Air Force drone program? Muslim rampage in Belgium declared not Islam-related. Indiana Democratic Party leader quits amid fraud probe. We're reading from michaelsavage.com. Terrorist attack survivors outraged by White House guest. Gee, unbelievable. What else is on my website? Let's run through it before you get upset. TV teaches the slut life. It certainly does. There's a story I can't even ask you to read about a girl 22 years old who was carjacked outside an ATM machine by a few animals. She was shot 4 times, raped, and she asked her captors to pray with her before they mutilated her with a shotgun. Take a look at their faces. You'll get the rest of the story. One picture is worth 1,000 lives. Finally, on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, neti pots can kill you. You know the things that the hippies like to stick up their nose when they're not snorting coke? Well, I have a thing called a neti pot for their sinuses. They wouldn't use a drug or a medication, no. They have to use a neti pot from advanced India. Anyway, there are parasites in the water right into the brain. Go ahead. Go use your neti pot. Well, still time to buy, guess what, Abuse of Power. First printing, few copies left. Buy your rare first printing after you read a free chapter. All of this on michaelsavage.com. I want to now turn to an earlier book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, written by yours truly, where I fear that President Bush made a big mistake in going into Iraq. And I said, as a student of history, it's painfully clear to me that Mr. Bush has made essentially the same crucial mistake that Jimmy Carter made in Iran. Without getting too technical, let me explain. And then I explain it. And then I said, George Bush going into Iraq made a big mistake. And I said, as you'll see in a moment, by toppling the Butcher of Baghdad, more instability and more radical Islamic influence has emerged, not less. Which is why we must consider whether or not President Bush has made the same mistake as Jimmy Carter as a result of his humanitarian instincts. In other words, you may argue that history is repeating itself because of liberal advisors to the throne of power. Was I wrong? I wasn't wrong. And I said it was a military miscalculation. So I said, so it may be that Bush's war will have inadvertently created a super Iran. How? I asked. Operation Iraqi Freedom is, in effect, creating a Shiite nation, Iraq, next door to another Shiite nation, Iran, who happens to be a founding member of the Axis of Evil. Shiite, Shmiite, you say? What's this got to do with you? Plenty. I said, there is a high possibility that a Shiite Iraq will ally itself with Iran, a nation ruled by Shiite Ayatollahs, and unify against us, which means that the hornet's nest of radical Islam may actually increase in size rather than, as Bush had hoped, shrink. In sheeple terms, that means we might have just supersized our terrorists' base. It's unbelievable to me that I prayed this wouldn't happen, but it did happen. We may have liberated the Shiites, but Americans are still infidels to them. And so therefore, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to tell you, but back in 05 or 06 when I wrote Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, I saw the same mental disease had infected the Bush administration as had infected Carter. And I feared that this day would come, and you've only seen nothing, the beginning rather, nothing yet. Christians are being slaughtered, churches are being blown up, the Jews have been driven out of Iraq. For what? How many Americans paid with their lives? 4,500. How many are wounded? 32,200. For what? To create a greater Iran. Why? Because our leaders seem to be less in touch with reality than are some of those of us in the media. That's right. How is that possible? Because we think. We don't use groupthink. We use real think, real brain. And unfortunately, it looks like I was right. All this and more today on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Nutty friend, a real SOB, a piece of garbage. He was a miserable rat, even as a kid, a miserable rat, because he had a crazy mother who was on Benzedrine to lose weight. She went to some crazy doctor in Jersey who put her on speed. She'd come back nuts, I mean crazy. And she'd drive the pink Cadillac. They had a little more money than everyone else. The father was hardworking. She was a nothing. Always on Benzedrine and a wacko. She was so crazy that she would take a dog chain, she once did this, and beat herself across the wrists, and they were bleeding. So when the husband came home at night, like from working all day from some delivery route that he owned, he had a franchise, whatever, she came screaming, and she said, Joe, look what your son did to me, look what he did to me. And the father would go upstairs, and he had a fist fight with the son, because the crazy mother said that the son did this to her wrist when she did it herself. Can you believe this kind of situation? So I have no compassion for him. He was a rat before that, and he's still a rat. He's still a no-goodnik. But he was a good friend of mine when I was in the fifth grade, because who knows? You don't know people. And since I was sort of a mischievous child, naturally I sought out the more mischievous of the students, those who fidgeted the most, had the brightest eyes, and never listened to the teacher. They were my kind of people. Today already they put us into Ritalin therapy and turn us into robots. I wouldn't be on the radio today. I'd be like an accountant somewhere in a prison. I'd be counting underwear for a prison somewhere to make sure that the underwear didn't get stolen. But the long and short was, yeah, the crazy mother. That doesn't excuse him for being nuts. As years went on, one of the kids in the neighborhood became a very famous, two of them became famous rock and roll singers, two, out of Queens. I won't mention their names. One had a big hit at 11 or 13 years old. He was always more mature than us. He had, like, women. You know, like guys at 13, like the guys with a pompadour, and he had like a girlfriend 19. I never understood that. We were still like dreaming. This guy had like a woman. You know, she was 20. I don't know how they got that. Like through the music business, they probably gave him a. So he went and did a tour, this musician, in Japan at 14. Dropped out of high school. He had one song. It was a huge hit, like 145. I don't remember. It wasn't Runaround Sue, but it was in that genre. So he goes to Japan, a big tour. The Japanese always liked American rock and rollers. Now he comes back. Now it's years later. Now he's on his behind. And he's got nothing. So he becomes a U.S. postman. I swear to God, years later, the same rock and roller who had the Jaguar before anyone could even drive, the blue Jaguar, the cuff that stood out of the jacket, the pompadour, became a postman. There's nothing wrong with being a postman, but, you know, you start out as a rock and roller and you end up as a postman. That's a pretty hard road, you know what I'm saying? It's better to start out as a postman and end up as a rock and roll star. Let me tell you, what'd you say I was going to talk about before I told that story? He had a blue Jaguar, an XK140 MC drophead coupe. To this day, I want that car. I have a Ferrari. I still want that 56 XK140 drophead coupe. So that bad kid, going back now to the bad kid whose mother beat herself on the arm. So we like to go around all over New York by subway, and we were like 12, 13. We went everywhere. 12, 13, 14, Manhattan, Hubert's Flea Circus, down in the bowels of the basement of the subways, there were guys selling, like, they weren't porno magazines, they were soft core. And the old, you see the old geezers there lining up looking at the magazines. We try to, like, you look at them, hey, kid, get out of here, get out of here, kid, get out of here. You know, that kind of thing. So we used to like to go to Coney Island, and they had exhibits. I don't know how to describe it. They were like mannequins of wax figures. And there was some of them were scary as heck. Well, one of them was of George Metetsky, the mad bomber of the subway. And it was so lifelike. Like, if you were a kid 12 and you had just been on a New York subway car in the heat for an hour and you went out to Coney Island and you stood outside one of those exhibits and you looked in, they showed him like in a jail cell. The guy looked like he was going to come out of the cell and strangle you. Well, adjacent to that mad bomber display, there was another guy. This scared me to this day. I have nightmares about him. It showed a guy, I don't know what he did, dismembered girls or women. I don't remember what he did. He was really bad, this one. And he looked like ordinary Joe, white guy, ordinary guy, And they found him. I remember it was like a mad thing in New York. They didn't know what to do. Girls were being found dismembered. Finally, they tracked this nut down to a chicken farm in New Jersey. I don't remember his name. And he's got like a corpse in a trunk under the bed. I mean, the whole thing, man. So this exhibit in Coney Island of the wax figure shows this guy reconstructed in wax in a little room in the back of a chicken farm with a dismembered girl's body in a trunk. And he's got like blood on his feet with like a blank stare at you. And they show you like the feet and the hands and the blood. It was stuff that today they could never, ever show you. But life was richer as a result. For example, they had freak shows in those days. A genuine freak show is not so bad. The freak had a job. If I went to Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey, I didn't go for the horse or the elephant. I went for the freak show in the back. The one-breasted man. The half-bearded woman. The microcephalic. In other words, the people who today became politicians, in my day, they were in the back room of Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey without a Windsor nut. Or in another display, the same people today you might find on CNN or ABC or CBS, you know, after some surgery, they were in the freak show too. You know, half man, half woman, half human, half amoeba. And it was wonderful. I like the whole thing. You eat the popcorn, you walk around, you gape at the freak, you thank God that you're not like them. But the truth of the matter is, you say, well, it's exploited with the freak. No, if you ask freaks, I mean, a lot of them call them that today. You ask somebody, a freak of nature like that, they liked being in a freak show. They made a good living. They were around other abnormal people. They had a little, you know, world, a social world. They had sex, some of them, with each other. They socialized. Today, what? They sit at home watching television on welfare? You think that's better for a freak? No. So there's something to be said for going back to the America of the 1950s. Please don't bring up the Civil Rights Act. Do me a favor. I mean, America of the 1950s with a Civil Rights Act. Can we move on now as a better country?
Savage.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me.
With this act, because of the bravery of our troops, the sacrifices of their families, and the leadership of President Obama, we are able to say the war in Iraq is over.
Christmas Eve will find me.
Our troops are coming home. Coming home for the holidays with their families. President Obama promised to end the war in Iraq responsibly. Promise made, promise kept. 150,000 troops were in Iraq when President Obama took office. That number will now be reduced to just a couple thousand.
There's a mystery about Barack Obama, especially with his days at Occidental College. We suspect that he's off the map with regard to his radicalism, but we really don't know what was going on there. Well, joining us right now on the Savage Nation is award-winning political scientist Dr. John Drew, who I wrote about in Trickle Up Poverty. He knew Barack Obama at Occidental College. Dr. John Drew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's great to talk to you.
When did you first meet President Obama, and what was your impression of him?
I met the young Barack Obama in late 1980. It was at a girlfriend's house up in Palo Alto, California. My first impression is I thought he and his friend Shandu were a couple, and they were just walking so close to each other, and they just seemed so intimate. That was just my first impression. My girlfriend, though, told me that they weren't, and that they were part of the Democratic Socialist Alliance at Occidental College.
Why haven't we heard much of anything about his college days? Is it because he was so radical then?
Well, there actually is a lot of information about his college days. I think what happened is that his book sort of took all the oxygen out of the room. That people assume because he wrote about his time at Occidental College in his book, Dreams from My Father, that he was telling the truth about that time in his life. the reality of the situation is that the young Barack Obama I knew was not hostile to white people. He was pretty much a doctrinaire Marxist-Leninist in his ideology, and he was highly involved with throwing parties on campus and being part of a large extended left-wing community.
Well, why don't we hear this in the mainstream or midstream media?
Well, it's not because I didn't try. I sent out information to all the conservative news channels that I could find. I tried to contact the Republican Party. I had blog posts at the New York Times describing my face-to-face experience with young Obama's Marxist radical extremist ideology. My guess is that the state of the research just wasn't strong enough to support a credible case that young Obama was a radical Marxist.
Well, why do you think Republicans are not attacking Obama's college record more aggressively?
I think the problem is they're just not up to speed on the literature. My story has now been covered in your book, Trickle Up Poverty. It's been in Paul Kengor's book, Dupes. I was featured in Stanley Kurtz's book, Radical in Chief, and most recently in Jack Caschell's book, Deconstructing Obama. So there's now a substantial historical literature about young Obama's ideological extremism that simply wasn't available back in 2008. I think people working on the presidential campaigns now have the resources at their fingertips they need to have a much more accurate and compelling view of Obama's intellectual history. As far as I'm concerned, there's a straight line passing from Frank Marshall Davis in Hawaii through me to Alice Palmer and to Bill Ayers in Chicago. And it's a straight line of ideological consistency where young Obama has a profound commitment to a Marxist socialist way of thinking about things. And I think it's outrageous that Obama has never explained why he converted out of that Marxist socialist point of view. You know, I have a deeply compelling personal story about how I converted into being a conservative Republican. I've not once have ever heard Barack Obama explain how he stopped being a Marxist-Leninist.
Would you please describe an interaction that you had with now President Obama?
Well, at the time, young Barack Obama was anticipating a revolution on the scale of what happened in Russia and China. Literally a communist-style revolution taking place in his lifetime here in the United States. And I said that just wasn't going to happen, that we had never seen these forces of change produce a revolution in Western Europe, and that the kind of communist-style revolution he and his friends were anticipating wasn't in the cards. And Obama just sort of looked at my girlfriend and said, "That's crazy." And, you know, over time, over the course of that evening, I persuaded him that a revolution was not going to happen and that he was better off focusing on democratic electoral politics.
Where can we read more?
Definitely, you can go to my blog site. It's called Anonymous Political Scientist. And I have all the stories there about meeting Barack Obama. And also, you know, about my own story of intellectual growth over the last 30 years.
Well, Dr. John Drew, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much. It was great to talk to you.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
I'd be dead by now. I mean, I don't know how to put it. This is such a hard thing to say. I never thought it'd come out of me, but I never thought I'd live this long. Because I come from a short-lived father, and the grandfathers. I always had like this tick-tock over my head, like heart disease, the heart attack, blah. But then I spent years like looking for the reason. It's not like I think I found it, but I did change my lifestyle. Like I didn't smoke two packs of Philip Morris every day unfiltered. I didn't eat flunk, and I didn't eat, like, you know, fat meat and potatoes, although I'm eating more fat meat and potatoes now because the seafood that I was living on for years is all contaminated by and large. It's a hard thing to admit. I've been taking mega vitamins for 35 years. I mean, I've written many books on it. Many of you know my books going back to the 70s, right? So I'm here now. God knows I'll be here tomorrow, right? But let's say I live another my mother lived to 88, father to 55. I don't know. Let's say I live to 10 more years. Functional, good functional years. I'm coming up with a number. I don't know how long it'll be. 10 more minutes for all I know. But let's say 10 years. I can't just do radio. So I'm saying to myself, what am I going to do with myself, let's say, during the day when I'm preparing the show? And I don't need 10 hours a day to prepare anymore. I write best-selling books, but I still have too much energy. People say, where do you get it from? How do you do it at your age? What my age? I've been this way since I'm 5 years old. And I realized, I told you where I get the magic power from. I told you it's from my deceased brother, Jerome, my silent brother, Jerome. He never talked. He never walked. He was allegedly blind. I told you he was sent away, you know, at a home at five. It killed me. It ripped a piece of my guts out. And he died after 20 years in a home in a horrible, oh, God, in like a public, I think, Wiltwyck on Staten Island. Don't ask. My mother, poor mother, she's in heaven. What she had to go through every week to go visit him. She'd come back drained and couldn't talk for 2 days. So the influence of my silent brother on me, I think, is what motivates me to a great extent. Because I dreamed of him last week. I was going through a very bad, like, down, like, night or day. Do you ever have one of those? I have them all the time, up and down, up and down. It's the way I am. It's human beings are like that. The doctors would have you believe you're sick and need a medication in order to drug the human condition. No, thank you very much. I'd rather struggle with life rather than let you turn me into another a Democrat, you know, who gets up there with the Sieg Heil crowd and thinks if only there was a Obamacare for everybody, the world would be perfect. And I dreamed of my brother out of nowhere. He came to me and talked to me from the next world. Well, that unto itself is suspect, is it not? Anyway, what I'm getting at is, so what do I do with the rest of my life, with the spare time? I'm not going to open a restaurant. I have friends in the restaurant business. It's a grueling, horrendous, difficult life. You ask anyone who owns even a successful restaurant. I'm not talking about a greasy spoon. I mean really good places. And I see how hard it is. First of all, everyone will rob you blind if you blink an eye. That's A. Unless you're in there 20 hours a day. I don't care if it's credit card. I don't care what. They're going to walk out with a bottle of wine, a bottle of scotch, or money. That's all. That's number one. So you got to be there. And then you have to be there to watch the food. You realize a restaurant is only one meal away from a disaster? I thought about that. We in talk radio live on a tightrope. We're only one sentence or one word away from a total meltdown. But in a restaurant, you're only one meal away from it, too. You can serve a contaminated... What if you serve a contaminated Portuguese cucumber? Bing, you're out of business. Right? The next thing you know, all of the lawyers, all the relatives of Soros who weren't as smart, who became lawyers or dentists, they're in the restaurant. The dentist eats, gets sick, and then he goes to his brother, who's the lawyer, and sues you. You're out of... So, terrible business. So rule that out. Bar? No, I don't want to be a bartender. And a cafe? What, are you kidding me? I don't know why people go in these businesses, so that's not for me. So I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Cars? I love cars. I love boats. But I don't want to sell them necessarily. I could. What if I sold private jets for fun? I know a lot about them. I love them. I mean, even on the ground, I like private jets. I could probably be a good private jet salesman. But I don't know if I can go from talk radio into private yacht sales and jet sales. That might be fun. But I don't travel. That's the problem. I'd have to sell them out of my living room. So the only way, because I don't like to go anywhere. I like to basically do my radio show for my houses, too. So, in other words, if I wanted to sell the new G, I think it's the G550. I don't even know the latest one. I think they're coming up with the G600 now. I don't even know. It's competing with this one, that one, or Global Express. I'd have to sell it by the model in my living room. But I'll bet you I could sell them in model and then send you down to the airport to look at the real one. Same with ships. I could sell ships. I've always been interested in not in yachts, but in ships. I have a nice-sized 40-ton yacht that I drive myself with a bow and stern thruster. I've learned that. I can run this boat myself. Captain Mike and the dog, that's all we need. There's just something about the bay with the boat with no one on it. I mean, if I talk for a living, right, I don't really want anyone on the boat. Then I have to listen to them. I go insane listening to anybody on a boat. What am I on a boat for, listening to someone? You can go crazy when they're coming in your right ear and you're trying to dodge people on parasails and kayakers and schmucks cutting off boats. You got to focus on the water. So I get kids listening. Yak, yak, yak. People think they go on a boat. They get verbal diarrhea. All they want to do, yak. What are they going on a boat for? They could stay home on a telephone, you know, on like a party line, like, hello, Mrs. Goldberg. So I go out alone with the dog. You know why? Because I like to look at the baby seals every year they come up. I know the coves they come up in. I probably know the bay as well as anyone in the whole world, by the way. I don't think there's a cove in the San Francisco Bay I haven't been in. I'd say from the Bay Bridge forward all the way. I know the Bay Area very well. I've been boating in it for so long. As people who must know it better than I, I'll admit that, but I know it very well. Or it's a novel and it's a thriller. It's an amazing book because a lot of it is set in San Francisco Bay. The guy is a journalist who loses his national career because he's smeared by a group that is somewhat like a group you might know of. They smear him by taking his words out of context, and he winds up working for a local station only. But a lot of the book is set on San Francisco Bay and some islands that you may not have heard of. You're not going to believe this movie when it comes out. I know this movie's going to be turned. Book's going to be a movie. I'm so excited by it. So she said, Mike, why don't you stick to what you do? Do talk radio because it's all you're good at and you're great at it. Or keep writing those books, Mike. Don't diminish yourself by, you know, doing anything. So what I'm getting at is one of the things I thought of doing is becoming a life coach. Then I said, that's interesting. But then here's the problem. See, everything has a problem attached to it. I reached a point in life where everything has a negative to it. Nothing on earth is clean. Let's say I do the life coach thing, okay? So you want to do it in person because in the radio you don't meet any people, right? You're on the radio. You're in a studio, so you want people contact, right? People. It's like, let's say a big entertainer wants to do a live performance in a small club. That's well known because they need the contact with the people. Like Al Pacino would go from doing a movie to doing a live theater show in the Village. Why? He needs the crowd. He needs not the smell of the grease paint, but the smell of the enter with the perfume, I guess. I don't know, whatever it is. Whatever floats is his macaroni, okay? So I want the people contact, right? So I do the life coach things and what. Now I'm going to have them come to an office and fetch to me about what's wrong and I should tell them what to do. Okay, how do I protect myself from a yenta setting me up saying I did something inappropriate? I don't want anyone around me. All right, so you say, okay, Mike, you're so good at it. People would like your advice. Do it on the telephone. Then I'm back where I am. I'm on the radio again. I don't want to do it disconnected from people. I don't know how anybody in the healing professions today has a practice without fear of some moron saying that he did something to her. I guess you have to have a nurse in the room with you, right? But you can't do that if you're doing coaching. How does a psychiatrist do it? How does a psychiatrist sit in the room with a woman today without fearing she's going to go out and say to somebody, in the middle of it, he touched me? I don't understand this, the world we live in. Look at the calls I'm getting telling you what to do. I should grow celery seed extract? That's what I should do with a living? All right, tell you what, you'll be my life coach. How's that? Tell Michael Savage what he should do with the rest of his life in addition to 1-800-449-8255. It has to be on a classy level. Don't make recommendations like to give me a job where I need like I talked about, okay? Don't recommend I do something that I need a name tag, a hairnet, or a funny hat, in essence, or something on that level. I'm not looking for that kind of level of living or income. I'm not doing it for the money either. Remember that. I mean, of course I'll charge for whatever I do, but I'm not doing it for that reason. In the sense that I'm not a big spender. I don't wear jewelry. I don't need anything anymore. I don't want anything. So I'm not doing it for that. I'm doing it for the involvement with people and doing something of use to people and getting the feedback of being of use to people. You follow what I'm saying? Sacramento, Jeremy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I was wondering, a few months ago you had mentioned that you looked on eBay and you seen that your health book was going for like $200, and you said you were going to republish it and so no one could make money off you, and I was just wondering when you were going to...
I actually did republish Healing Children Naturally. It's on my website for $20 or so. People were selling used copies for up to $200. of that book. Now, you could buy it in a reprint edition of my own book there. People love that book. They keep buying it. It's an eternal classic. But I've written other books over the years that I'm thinking of redoing, and I don't even want to go through them. I wrote books in the 70s that were 20 years ahead of their time. You know that I wrote books reducing the risk of Alzheimer's that should have won Nobel Prizes? I wrote books in the 70s on with some anti-aging concepts in them that are currently fashionable in the medical profession today, but you wouldn't think that anybody would notice, would you? I notice. All that matters is that I know. Jay and Reno, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Savage, you need to start a company being a political consultant.
I've thought about that as well, because I'm probably as good. I would be as good at it as anybody. But I'm going to tell you something else. I've tried to advise people, because I know more about the heartbeat of America than any consultant in this country. I don't care what data they use. My microphone and my ears are the best data you could ever buy. And I know better what politicians should say, not say, and how to appeal to the people. They wouldn't listen to me. They go and buy some hack who worked for the opposition a week before. Many of them are kind of idiotic. I got to tell you, Jay, many of the people in politics are rather stupid. I must tell you, they're not that clever. But all right, I've thought of politics. I won't go into politics. I'll never run for office. I want to make it very clear. It's not a business for me. Look at this one. Paul in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, do you play a musical instrument? Have you ever tried?
I'm terrible. I have no musical sense. I've tried. I'm no good at it.
Savage.